Dr. Jerry, you got the whole world waiting. Been ready for you to start the conversation. Your point of view, it got the haters confused. Leave it up to you to bring us all the good news. Positive vibes and the sex appeal too. Dr. Andre Jerry, can I get an interview? Hello, everybody. Good evening and welcome back to an all new episode of Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. I am your host, Dr. Andre Jerry, and I'm happy to be back with you all after a 2-month hiatus. As many of you know, I recently transitioned back to the States following a 6-month tour in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Now, as with my first tour to Saudi, it was a great experience and I learned a great deal, but there is no place like home. I want to give a quick shout out to Reginald Bullock, who guest hosted the show in my absence in September. Reggie, thank you. You did an awesome job, a fantastic job. I got a lot of great feedback, so thank you so much. So before I introduce my guest for tonight, I want to let all the listeners know that we're trying something a little different tonight. So my social media team, shout out to Obi, has literally been begging me to go on IG Live during my shows. And I admit I've been reluctant. I've been scared. I'm not entirely comfortable being on camera like this. So, you know, fast forward 15 episodes later and after a lot of procrastination, I'm on IG Live right now. Shout out to everyone who's tuning in to our live. So listen, tonight's guest is a gentleman that I met last year when I hosted the annual Relevant with Renata event in Atlanta. Shout out to Renata Morgan and Pastor Jordan. So this gentleman was one of the many talented performers that did their thing, you know, that night. And I'll never forget, I was backstage. And normally while the performer is doing their thing on stage, I'm reviewing my cue cards for the next performer so I can get their intro right. But not while this guy was on stage. He commanded the attention of everybody in the room with just his sheer stage presence. He did spoken word. He did poetry. He did a little rap. He shared about his story, his background, and, you know, he shared a little bit about his passion. And, you know, so for myself and the audience, we were all glued to every word. We didn't want him to get off stage. At least I didn't. So when we had a chance to talk briefly after the show, I was like, man, you got to come on the show. I want to introduce you to my audience. And so here we are a year later, a little over a year later, actually, and we're finally making this happen. So I'm very excited. Without further fanfare, please allow me to introduce now my friend, Mr. Corey Baker. Corey, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Definitely appreciate it. Yes, it was a pleasure meeting you, and I'm glad that I was able to have the impact that I had on you and the rest of the people there. Shout out to Renata, too. That was a great event. Absolutely, man.
Yes. So Renata Morgan is a good friend of both of ours. Met her through you, of course, as I mentioned before. And she also has a show on the Artist First Radio Network, Relevant with Renata, that I believe is every second Monday. So definitely tune in to her show as well. You know, so normally, Corey, what I do is I go ahead and give a brief introduction of my guests, you know, to the listeners. But in the spirit of trying something different tonight, I'm going to ask you to tell our listeners, in your own words, who Corey Baker is.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, who Corey Baker is. Corey Baker is a man now, 44 years of age, but to take it back to the beginning, 1230-78, I was born in Sumter, South Carolina. By way of my mother, Debbie Baker, and my father, Nathaniel Phillips. And I was born in Sumter, South Carolina. My city, growing up there in the early 80s, it was pretty rough. So Corey Baker is a guy that kind of came from a rough upbringing, went through a lot of trials and tribulations in his life, and now is here on the Andre Jarry Show to kind of fill in some pieces and share with the rest of the world what my experiences was. So I'll get it. I guess the introduction will be better done with us getting into the story, man.
Right. So let's talk about that. You briefly mentioned, you know, in your childhood and your background a little. So let's just go ahead and talk about it. How was your childhood growing up? What was it like?
Well, I'm the middle child in the household. It was five brothers. It's actually six of us. My oldest brother, Nathaniel, from a prior relationship. But in the household that I was raised up in, my mom, my father, and my four brothers, I was the middle child. So I was the one that pretty much, I caught all the heat. You know, the two younger ones, they were the babies, and the two older ones, they were, they were a bit older, so they got away with a lot more. I just always felt like as a middle child, I don't know if that's just a middle child thing, but I felt like I used to get all the heat, man. But I grew up in a loving family, though. You know, my dad was a hardworking man, and the principal, the main jewel, I remember that my dad, because my dad passed earlier on, and we'll get into that. My dad always told me to make an honest dollar, and my mom was a hardworking woman and a loving mother, and she always taught me, son, always be a step ahead. So, So growing up was, it was kind of rough, though, because of the fact that my father died the day after Christmas, 1991, and I ended up, after burying my father, that's when the struggle really got real. And so that made my childhood and coming up a little bit more rough. And my mom having to struggle to raise five boys, it wasn't easy. And it wasn't something that could be hidden. You know, I seen the struggle. So I always had an urge to get out there and be able to do something to help my mom out. So, I had to grow up.
How old were you when your father passed?
I actually think we buried my dad on my 12th birthday. My dad,
oh, I was 12 years old.
Yep, because he died the day after Christmas, man. And my dad, I looked up to my dad. My dad is a legend in my family, and everybody that I've ever met that knew my dad had something good to say about him. So it took my life to a whole different page when my father died.
And you also I listened to a few of your other interviews, and you mentioned that your mom also passed while you were young, or was this later?
Yes, my mom passed later on. So when my dad passed, I was 12 years old, and my mom had to kind of raise five boys up until the time she passed, which was in 1997, or my mom passed. And the trauma, man, it really, really bothered me. So those dates, like a lot of times, I don't even remember exactly the date it was because I tried to block it out. It was so traumatic to me, because that just, that took me to a whole different place, because I instantly became homeless. My two little brothers were taken in, but I was over 18, so I wasn't getting a Social Security check or nothing like that, so I wasn't taken in, and that was my view of it, and that's when
by the age of 18, you had already lost your father and your mother?
Yeah.
And then your family was separated, which is going to add to, a whole nother level of trauma.
Right.
Oh, man.
Right. And this is the thing, Dre, that made it so difficult I was told that my mom was adopted. And so therefore, I didn't know my real blood relatives. I know like two or three cousins that I knew growing up, but I didn't know that my grandfather was really my grandfather, man, because, you know, back in the day, they used to sweep stuff under the rug. And long story short, man, when my mom passed, you know, and I was told she was adopted, it kind of just put me in a place to where now I'm, you know, 18, 19 years old out here, and I felt like it was me against the world. And so I, you know, I definitely took to the streets because it wasn't much, you know, opportunity. It wasn't like I could just jump, you know, I didn't have no career or anything like that. And it was just, man, survival mode for me. So I got into the streets, deep into the streets, and did a lot of things that nowadays I look back, man, and I'm not proud of. But being in the shoes that I'm in, I also can look back and say, man, I see a lot of growth and development, and that I can be proud of.
So let's go back to that, because I'm just thinking about what you just said. You said you were 18. By that point, you lost your father at 12. You lost your mother a few years after that. The family seems like it was displaced. You were separated from your siblings. You mentioned being homeless at one point. All I'm hearing is trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma. And, you know, you turn to the street. You talk about trauma. How would you describe your mindset back then, when you think back to that period of time before you went to prison the first time? What would you describe your mindset as?
It was pretty much survival mode. Like I said, it was a dark time and a dark place in my life. I, you know, did a lot of hustling in the street, illegal hustling. And, you know, during those times, I had to make up my mind, like, hey, I got to make it out here. So it was like I kind of became numb to a lot of things and had a mindset like I got to do whatever I got to do to make it. And I didn't have the guidance of nobody to really kind of cool me down. Actually, you know, partner that I was running with in the street, he was a couple years older than me, and he was, you know, kind of guiding me right on down that path with him, because I was, you know, I was the hot-headed one, and I'm going to set it off. And, you know, so he would just kind of be, you know, that's how I always been. But now I know how to channel that energy in the right way. But, yeah, literally, man, I was in a dark place, and it's really hard to describe, but it just, if I could describe it in a way like just being in a, like you in the woods, you lost, it's dark and you're in the woods, you don't know where you're at, you don't know what can happen. That's like literally where I was in life, because every day, man, it was so many, you know, shootouts, you know, things happening to people close to me in the street. Death. I dealt with death so much, Dre. I mean, when I was, you know, in school, I told you I used to rap. And back in high school, my friend died, Q, the ill son, died at 16, leukemia. So that was right around the time. And then my mom died. So me and his mom got close. She lost a son. I lost a mother. So she became my godmother. So that was like a light that I had out there in that darkness. So I did have those, you know, beacons like that. You have people like Mama Lois, you know, one of my friends, like that's my brother, kind of took me in. So I had places that I could go of comfort, but I was still, when I stepped outside of the house, it's like I'm, you know, I'm still out here in the darkness, man. So it was survival mode. And I did things that I'm not proud of, man. I'm really not proud of, like, to the point to where I go, you know.
Would you say, not to cut you off, but would you say that going to prison saved your life in a way? Or do you feel, like, when you got arrested or and that whole thing went down in your prison, did you feel, the part of you feel relieved?
I kind of knew that it was going to come to an end at some point. And when that did happen, I honestly knew that it was going to be a ride, because once I got in that van, when we robbed the bank and we took them on that chase and everything, when I was the last one they caught, and when I got in that van, I told the rest of them, I said, y'all might as well kick y'all feet up because we about to ride. And, you know, off the prison I went. But that's when I was able to kind of get there and self-reflect, you know, once I got locked up. So, yeah, that did save me, man. It took me, you know, it saved me off of that path, because it was going to either be that or death. You know, because I wasn't living right at all.
So while you were, oh, I just lost my train of thought. But when you went in the first time, were you a father at that point? Like, had you had kids at that point yet?
Yes, I did. My oldest daughter, my mother, passed when my oldest daughter, before she was pregnant, and I have two sons. But my oldest son was, when I got locked up for the armed bank robbery, I had a son that was 6 months, and my daughter was like 2.5. So it was a lot of pressure for me, and I was under a lot of pressure, like, since my mom died. Because, like I said, during the time she died, you know, my daughter's mama was pregnant with her. So it was like one or another, man.
Goodness. So you had a lot of time away from your kids at very young ages, where they definitely needed their father. So I'm sure that played, you know, into a lot of guilt on your end, in addition to, you know, trying to serve your time and stay out of trouble and just process everything that had happened at that point. I'm sure that added to your angst.
Yep, absolutely, man. It absolutely did. And if I could try to give you guys a picture, just try to give a picture, because I know I've got a lot in those years, but to give you guys a picture, it was like, things kind of slowed down for me once I got behind those walls, and that started to sit in, and I started to experience different things. Like, it was a psychological shock and a change, because I'm coming from wilding on the street, Dre. I'm talking about wilding on the street to going into prison, and now I feel young wild mentality. And it was like they made you, like, you got to work when you back there, you know? So I had to transition. Like, I kept going to the hole and getting write-ups for, you know, what they call, like, being disrespectful to staff, things of that nature, because I had to go from that transition from society into the prison, you know, that institution. And the whole goal in there is to break you mentally, man. So, you know, it was, had to put up with, but it also was a think tank, and I began to read in there, began to learn and grow and write more music as well. So there was a lot that happened during those years. What would you like to talk about that during those years?
Well, I know during our pre-production meeting, you mentioned that you had spent a lot of that time writing songs. You mentioned that you wrote over 200 songs during your time in prison. And I want to talk a little bit about that. I mean, has writing always been something that came naturally to you, or was this more of a form of, like, therapy for you to sort of channel your emotions while you were in there?
You know, that's something I always did. So music was my first love. I fell in love with music by my uncle teaching me other people's songs. And then by the time I fourth grade, my brother wrote my first song for me, which was for the DARE class. And after doing that, I actually won the little DARE talent show. So by the time I was in middle school, I started writing my own music. And to be honest, I've always expressed a lot in my music, a lot better. And I had a song that I wrote called Times Is Hard. And this was around the time, like, I couldn't have been no more than like 13, 14 years old. So the perfect time, man. I like to just share that piece right there, man. That's from like years ago. And I kind of pointed out a few things in there. So if this is a good time, I'd like to share a piece of that song I wrote back in the days called Times Is Hard. I think I wrote it around 94.
Okay, cool.
So, Times Is Hard. I did this to a Scarface beat. As a matter of fact, a Scarface instrumental.
You might as well go ahead and give us a little bit of it.
Okay, I got you. I started out by saying, born as a victim, but still was gifted with a talent of rap, and it always kept me lifted. From day one, it was fun to be known as a son of a mother and a father, but some still got none. Better them than me. That's how I felt for years. So my father deceased, it broke me down to tears. Then I thought about suicide and went to the streets, and I found it was do or die to make ends meet. Thought I was an example being used by God. Never thought about bills and things that make life hard. Still I'm trying to survive. My mom busting her ass. Rode to work with a friend because she paid for the gas. This year went on for years until we got us a ride. Sporting Pumas and Wranglers, so the boss at the slide. Trying to earn an honest dollar so I'm raking a yard. A young man coming up just when times is hard. You know?
I love that, man. I love that.
Yeah, that was at, you know, around 14. So I started, you know, writing. And as you can tell, that writing helped me express my life. And
yes.
I kind of fell in love with it then. And I kept at it.
I miss that type of rap, man. The storytelling rap. Not just rapping and talking about nonsense, but real stories, real parts of your life that glamorous, not so glamorous, hardcore, whatever it is. I miss that form of expression. You don't hear it a lot in today's rap and hip hop music, but that took me back, man. That was really good.
Yeah, you can tell the way it was structured, it still got that old school delivery to it. And it was, you know, that was back in them days when you had that in music, you know, a little bit more of it was the second verse. My big brothers was busy getting kicked out of school, steady flunking their classes so that they can be cool. Came home and got fussed at and sent to their room. Probably take a couple of light licks with the broom. Something I had realized, my brother had gold, and I'm thinking it's something that he probably stole. Till I saw he be staying on the streets, he be hanging, having money, driving cars, so I figured he's slinging. And I stuck in their scene and saw him talk to a fiend. Now his pocket is bold, just cause he loaded with cream. Still I think of a plan, but yo, what could I find? I guess I sit here and wait until I made up my mind. And I went out of the second. You see what I'm saying?
But
I'm painting the picture, bro.
You are a lyricist for sure, brother. I'm glad that you had a form of outlet. You need a form of outlet anyway, let alone when you're locked up and you're imprisoned and you desperately need things to keep your mind focused, your mind trained, just to keep your spirits lifted. So I'm glad that you fell back on that first love of yours, which was music. But that's a good segue into, our transition to the break here, because I've been enjoying this conversation, but we do need to go ahead and take a quick break. And when we come back, though, what I want to do is talk about the trauma aspect of all of this, because I know that you do a lot of work with mental health and mental health awareness. So I want to tie in that piece to it when we come back from the break. But listen, everyone, we're going to continue this discussion with Corey in a few minutes. Once we come back to the break or from the break, we're going to talk more about Corey's incredible journey. We're going to talk about his transformation and his dedication to empowering individuals for successful reintegration into a society after incarceration. And we're going to talk about some of the challenges that he's encountered in doing that. So stay tuned. There's more to come when we return. We'll be right back.
buddy pass, just a diplomatic passport to get me through the airport. I'm chilling at the lounge, they never keep me waiting. Keep pouring them drinks till I reach my destination. I'm going back to Saudi, Saudi, Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi, Saudi, Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi, it's like my second home. The Arabs are exotic, I can't leave them alone. They like the taste of chocolate, sexy, erotic. And if you like the finer things than money, ain't no object. I'm going back to Saudi, Saudi, Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi.
Baby, tell me naughty.
I'm going back to Saudi, just in the nick of time. I'll party with the Saudis at the end of Ramadan. And when they on that shisha, it's nice to meet ya. So let's go do our thing while we sip Saudi champagne. I'm going back to Saudi, Saudi, Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi. If I meet a sheik, I may never come home. Just give me a week, I just might show my camel toe. I'm going back to Saudi, Saudi, Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi, Saudi, Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi.
Baby, tell me naughty.
Baby, tell me naughty.
might show my camel toe. I'm going back to Saudi, Saudi, Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi.
Baby, dumb and naughty.
I'm going back to Saudi, Saudi, Saudi. I'm going back to Saudi.
Baby, dumb and naughty.
I can't get you out of my head, baby, baby. I can't get you out of my head, baby, baby.
Feels like we're going too fast. Cause I wanna make this last. Feels like we're going too fast. Cause I wanna make this last. I feel like we're going too fast. I feel like we're going too fast. I feel like we're going too fast.
You're back live with Dr. Andre Geary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Live with Dr. Andre Geary. So you just finished listening to my singles, Wait a Minute, Baby, and I'm going back to Saudi. So both of these songs are now available on Spotify, Amazon Music, and all streaming platforms. So if you happen to be an independent artist, musician, or an author, and you'd like to showcase your latest project on our internationally broadcast show, then send an email to my team at livewithdrandregeary@gmail.com. Again, that's livewithdrandregeary@gmail.com. So listen, if you're just joining us, we've been having a very candid conversation with prison reform and rehabilitation advocate Corey Baker. And he shared a little bit with us about his life experiences and how he's overcome pain from his past and used those negative experiences as fuel for his passion and in making sure men and women who are coming out of the prison system have the mindset and the tools to successfully reintegrate back into society. So, Corey, last year around this time, I had the pleasure of interviewing another Corey, Corey George. And for anyone who's familiar with him, he's a behavioral coach and a trauma recovery expert. And so before the break, we talked a little bit about trauma, you know, that's associated with, you know, doing time in prison and also reacclimating back into society. Could you talk to our audience more about that, please?
As far as the process of the reacclimating back into society?
No, I want to touch on the trauma that's associated, the different types of trauma that's associated with going into the prison system, then trying to reacclimate back into society, and just some of the general trauma that people endure before they even get to prison that may have led to making decisions that led them to the prison system in the first place.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, as a part of my PR Max curriculum, I have a PR Max Addressing Trauma 101, actually, so where I speak about and talk about identifying those different types of trauma. So that's perfect. I speak about childhood traumas. With childhood trauma, like how do we as men deal with the childhood trauma that troubles us in the present day and alters, oftentimes prevents us from enjoying our life to the fullest. A lot of situations that happen in our childhood sometimes affect the way we think or react to any given situation. And a lot of times those childhood traumas lead to people making decisions that can have them ending up in prison. And so addressing those traumas is very important when it comes to the process of reentry, coming back from incarceration, reentering into society. Because as you come from the incarcerated side, it's like, how do we go from institutional lives where we're told what to do every day and when and how to do everything, you know, while being incarcerated, to change over in the free world when you face with everything that you got to do now, but nobody to tell you how to do things. So you have to kind of relearn how to live life. And man, when you think about the people coming out, the brothers and sisters now, because a lot of times people only think about men, but there's a lot of women locked up as well. You know, the United States of America has the largest prison incarceration population in the world. Yep, and that's crazy, but, you know, that's a whole nother interview. But when it comes to incarceration trauma, it's like, how do we turn our brain from a high-level alert survival mode to relax and plan and work on successful reentry? You know, when I was in prison, there were certain times when, you know, there's tension between different groups or maybe different races. And like, you got to kind of sleep with one eye open, and you got to walk around on alert. And it's just different ways you move. And to come out here, you know, into society after years and years of living under those type of stresses, it's a process in the transition. Because I just give a simple example. You people in the prison line and get stabbed up behind cutting in front of somebody in the line. I'm not saying that it happens every single time, but that's something. It's certain things you just don't do. But imagine somebody coming from that type of mentality to coming back out here into society and not necessarily having the mental or emotional capacity to be able to consciously and intentionally, you know, make that transition. Like, that is it could be a scary thing. That's why the importance of, you know, what I do is always at the forefront of my mind, because I know that there's somebody that's going through that process and that may need that help and support in making that transition, you know?
Exactly. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I don't think, of course, there are services and organizations out there, but I feel like they're not enough that are tailored toward. And that's another thing. What is the proper terminology to refer to someone who has been out of the prison system and reacclimating back into society? Because ex-con and ex-convict, it just doesn't sound right when I say it. Is there a newer, more modern term that we're using that doesn't sound so offensive?
I think that if we want to take the stigma off of it to any degree, I think the most general thing to do is just the same way you would address somebody that hasn't been to prison, you know, like at like an individual. But to give a softer term, I've heard the term returning citizen. However, the goal, though, Dre, what I really believe that will make a more effective, have a more permanent and lasting effect is when a person did their time and they come home from prison, that shouldn't even be brought up no more. Like, why do we have to be referred to as a label or a stigma? Because that's still put, regardless of how we make the term, you know, the words or what words we use, is still the same thing. You just still painting a pig black, brown, or a light pink to make it look, you know, a little bit, you know, better. And at the end of the day, I advocate for the fact, because like I said, I've been affected by these same things. So I advocate for, hey, when a person do their time and they come home, they make it home after doing their time, all those years that we done been away from our family, suffering day in and day out. Like, that's every day you're going to remember where you at. You're suffering through it. So it's not like a punishment where something happens to you, you know, once because of what you did and you just take that one punishment. No, every single day you wake up, you were in prison. That's a reality for a long time. So I feel like the right thing to do is when a person come home and they've already did their time for whatever the crime is, like, address them like you would address a person that you like, let that be in the past. And I think if we can find a way to do that, then, you know, then we would have more second chance programs that actually, you know, that succeed and do a lot more, because there's some brothers coming home from prison, man, that I know that I'm going to actually connect you with. So you will have a diverse catalog of people that you can, you know, talk to when it comes to this topic. But I know some brothers that been doing time with me that then came home like 10, 20 years, and they're out here, I'm talking about, doing it. I'm so proud of these dudes, man. Jasper Allen, that's one of them. My man, Jap, man. Me and Jap, we used to be studying, being education. You know, we ran across each other a lot, but it was like these are the guys we would see on the yard, and we always studying. We always preparing ourselves. Man, Jap then came home for 20 years, and he been home now. I think he just celebrated 5 years and worked at Amazon and just then came up and doing great. So shout out to people like him. My man, K-Mel.
Shout out to K-Mel.
Yes. So we were going to have him on whenever we do a panel. I spoke to him today, but the brother has a lot to give when it comes to, you know, knowledge and wisdom. And he actually is a personal trainer out here now in Atlanta. K-Mel the Body Mechanic is where you can find them at. And me and K-Mel used to work out. So if, and I can take that back into even the interview so we don't get so far off, but to point out another thing that helps you through that trauma while you're back there. Because remember, the process of having a successful reentry starts while you're back there. The guys that I see that are successful out here now are the guys that when we were back there, we was reading and studying and learning and preparing ourselves. You know, 9 times out of 10, if you're back there and you're not studying or preparing yourself or at least making a plan for your release, then what are you going to have to come home to other? You only know what you know. So if you haven't taught yourself anything new when you come home, what are you going to do? You're going to be forced to go for what you know. And that's a very key point that I want to make to just to the justice society out there, for people in society to know that, hey, if you have people that's incarcerated, please encourage them to prepare themselves for their release while they're back there. Tell them don't wait to when they get home to try to get their credit clean and all of that. They can do that while they're back there. And that way, when they come home, they'll have a better chance, man. So those are some of the things I advocate for with my prison reform program.
Oh, man. Corey, there's so many questions I want to ask you. I'm not going to nearly get to them all, but one of the things I wanted to ask you is what has the response from the community at large been like? And I mean from, you know, community organizers, organizations, leaders in the community, and even down to, you know, some of the the people who are reentering and their families. What's been their feedback and their response to the work that you've been doing?
Well, honestly, man, it's been a lot of positive feedback, like, and that's from many different aspects. That's from the aspect of some people, like some just regular community residents that haven't been to prison but have somebody that's been to prison. And sometime by listening to some of the things that I say and teach, they're able to get things out of my toolkit as far as to take back and give to their people, you know, or in letters that they're writing to their loved ones that's incarcerated. They're actually able to learn certain things from me that they can kind of use in their relationship with their loved ones back there. Like, you know, so I've been getting good reviews from residents. As far as the public, like as far as the police stations, I've been by several police stations and probation offices, and I go by the jailhouses to just offer my services as a mentor and with my prison reform program and curriculum. So I've been being received properly. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's been 100%, you know, just open arms and welcome, because there are people that still have bias and just don't want to see a person succeed because they look at you like, oh, you've been to jail or you're a prisoner and we don't want you. But at the end of the day, I'm like, if the problem is recidivism, I'm the prime example of someone that's made it home, you know, and I've been through the recidivism process, which means I relapsed and went back, and I then came back home and been home now for over a decade. So being free for 10 years, that's a prime example. So I was thinking that more of the jails would be, you know, quick to just let me in and come to talk to people and offer my program. However, guess what, Dre? They still use the fact that I've been in jail before. So it's like you got to jump through those type of hoops. And this is where I look at the system, the way things are set up, is set up in a certain way intentionally. But I still am able to kind of make my way through there and get the word to the people that really need the word, man. But there's opposition, but for the most part, I get great reception and great feedback from what I'm doing. And the blessing for me is knowing that I'm helping the person that's coming home. Like when I see somebody with those browns on and those Bobos, I pull right up on them. I don't care where I'm at. I pull right up on them. Hey, bro, how you doing, man? I know the situation. Let me talk to you for a minute, you know? And I offer them wisdom, guidance. I got clothes that I give people. I got a little clothes closet. I've given out tablets, you know, so people can be able to contact their family and stuff, man. So, yeah, that's true passion, man. And the reason I do it is because I always say that I know that I didn't go through that for nothing. I'd be damned if I did 10 years in prison for nothing. I'm going to help somebody with my testimony, with my experience, with what I done went through, because, you know, I know that people out here feel alone, especially a lot of the ones that went through some of the things that I went through, you know. So I'm happy to be an advocate, especially for somebody that has made the conscious decision that they want to do better in life. And those are the ones I lean towards. You have some people that got their mind made up, Dre. They like, yo, I'm gangster, I'm street, I'm hood for life, da-da-da-da-da. So, hey, bro, I'm not going to knock you. I'm not God. I'm not going to judge you. But I'm not going to waste my time with you either. I'm going to let you go through your process over there until you get to the point to where we can meet together on in alignment. And other than that, I'm going to go and focus my time and energy on the brothers and sisters that came home and say, hey, I'm looking for a way to do it better. I want to succeed out here this time. I'm here like, hello, hello, what's up? You trying to do the right thing? Man, you on my path. Let's get together. You know, how can I help you? And for all the other prison reform ministries out there that might be hearing my voice, please feel free to reach out to me, because I believe that we can accomplish more than I. Just because we both doing the same thing doesn't mean that I got to hate on you or you trying to take my market. No, let's do more of what we're doing. I think that's a problem in our culture, to where, you know, a lot of us, when we start getting into business and doing things, like if we're nonprofits and we're advocating for justice and freedom, and then why should we? There shouldn't be no competition. It should only be collaboration. Let's come together and do more of what we're doing. And I would like to see that in society. And so I'm stepping out to be the example of what I would like to see others doing in society, man. Like, let's come together and help our people come home and get on the right path and have support to stay on the right path, you know?
Absolutely. And we're on the same page, brother. And I'm very happy about the work that you're doing. And, you know, I've already pledged my support to you, and I look forward to collaborating with you on future projects. And because I really love this form of ministry that you have. Because really that's what it is. And I love that you are the bridge in support that you know, bridge that gap in support that people may not have when they come out, because not everybody is going to, you know, have the familial support or the spousal support or any support. And then we already know about the gaps that are present in society that's going to prevent challenges and be discouraging to somebody that's wanting to keep their life on the right track. So I applaud you, man. And before we close, because we're almost at the top of the hour, I want you to talk real quickly about the work that you're doing with Miracle City Mission, the organization that you just had incorporated. And I also want you to touch on Skill Sets for Life.
Okay, absolutely. So the Miracle City Mission and Skill Sets for Life are at the forefront of what I'm doing right now, especially in my hometown. My hometown, if you Google Merck City, Sumter, South Carolina will come up. And everybody knows Merck stands for kill. So my city has been known as one of the, you know, having that negative connotation on it. And so there's a group of us that got together because I was a part of the problem and I want to be a part of the solution now. So there's a group of us that got together, made a conscious decision that, hey, let's do something to take this negative connotation off of the city and go for a more positive name and push that. And so in the process of me doing a conference, it kind of stemmed from, for as far as me being involved, it stemmed from me getting with David Witherspoon, who's from my city, Sumter, South Carolina. Shout out to David and the rest of the team, Melissa, Jacob, Demetria, Marlo, and Latika. So I got with David, and we wanted to do something to bring a positive change to the community So to take away that negative connotation. So that's what we're doing there. We've done kids car washes. I did a speak to the youth conference where I had several speakers. That was, man, it was great. The outcome was great. And I'm looking to collaborate with more people in the city as a lot of people reach out to me as a result of that. And then with Skill Sets for Life, what Skill Sets for Life is all about, it's a platform that I'm putting together, and I'm launching the podcast Skill Sets for Life, launching 2024. But I already have some footage and some classes. But what we're doing with Skill Sets for Life is teaching people outside of the school system the skill sets that they would need for life. And it was inspired.
Yes.
My dream was inspired by my oldest son. When he graduated, he pretty much said, "Dad, man, I feel like I've been robbed." And I'm like, "What's happened, son?" He said, "If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't know nothing about finances, nothing about how to get a house, how to get a car, anything." He's like, "I feel like I'm 12 years in school and they really didn't teach me any life skills." So upon me praying and meditating and dwelling on that, it came to me, Skill Sets for Life. And Skill Sets for Life is going to be a collaborative effort for a contribution to humanity, where I'll be interviewing people going into their life and what they've experienced in their life, and asking them to leave their five top skill sets for life, which will be a part of a toolkit that people can have access to by going on my online school, Skill Sets for Life, or I'll have everything posted on my social media. But it's a way for us to pass down our knowledge and wisdom. For example, I might have a Skill Sets for Life segment about surviving prison, because I've learned skill sets, like, and it takes skill sets to survive that environment. Skill sets for life for entrepreneurship, if you want to start a business, you know, Skill Sets for Life for reentry, for dealing with trauma. So anybody that wants to collaborate with me on that, feel free to send me an inbox and we can set it up and schedule it, because I would like for everybody to be able to share their skill sets for life, and let's start passing down this generational knowledge and wisdom to our next generation. That way that they can thrive and do better than we did.
Awesome. So for those out there, Corey, who are interested in connecting with you and learning more about you, or even booking your services and collaborating with you and other organizations, tell us really quickly where we can find you online and what's the best way to get in contact with you.
Okay, you can find me online under my full name, Corey Nathaniel Baker, on Facebook, Corey Nathaniel Baker on Instagram. My prison reform program is PR Max, and you can actually look up PR Max on Instagram as well. And I always put my email out there as well. It's kofoway, that's kofoway at gmail.com. That's kof as in Frank, oway at gmail.com. And you can actually, if you wanted to send me a message by text, it's 319-280-7859. That's 319-280-7859. So please reach out to me if it's concerning prison reform, mental health. We have a mental health awareness club as well. Mendable is the app. You can download it. Mendable app. www.mendableapp. And join us on there as well. Because I know we won't be able to get to that, bro. We at the top of the hour, man. Seems like time just put on the
case. It flies, man. There's never enough time when you got a great guest like this. Don't worry, I have you back on the show, and we're going to be collaborating in the future. But, Corey, listen, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, and just sharing your passion with us, your story with us. I've enjoyed it. I know our listeners sure have as well. I wish you all the best. You know I love you, man, and much success to you. And I have no doubt that you are definitely operating in your purpose, and you'll have great success.
Thank you, bro. Love you more. And thank you for everything that you've done, because you've been a great support system to me as well. You've been inspiration to me at times as well. And I appreciate everything that you do, man. So I wish you blessings and the best of success. And I'm always here for you as well, man. Thank you. And thank you to your listeners for listening as well, man. Peace and blessings. I really enjoyed this experience.
Thank you to all of our listeners in whatever part of the world you're tuning in from this evening. I appreciate your listenership so very much. thank you to those who were on our IG live tonight. I know it was kind of wonky. That was our first time. It'll get better in subsequent shows. But stay tuned so you can continue to catch some of the great guests that we're having each episode. Be sure to join us for the next episode of Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. It'll air on December 27th. That's Wednesday, December 27th at 8 p.m. Eastern. I'll be joined by my favorite comedian, and that's Freddie Valor, who was on the show last year. So looking forward to that. Until then, everyone have a great holiday season, and good night, everybody.